We are finally here, the Unicorn's Couch. This is Orrin Howard, along with Jeremy Darden and Robert Bacon, and we are super excited. This has been a long time coming. We have planned for this and talked about this for years. We're new to podcasts. We're new to this experience. And you got to be wondering off the break, what is the Unicorn's Couch? Well, it started with a vision that I had. This vision that I had wanted to focus on getting out information, talking about real core issues from a clinical standpoint with counselors and therapists from a male perspective, in particular, focusing on African Americans. And what happened was I was finding that in therapy when I was meeting with people that there were a lot of issues and questions and feelings about men's health, African-American men's health, African-American men communication, relationships, and things like that. And so this vision I had always included these two gentlemen that are going to introduce themselves that really had a vision, really had a passion, wanted to be a part of something special. And I consider them, I know their family. And so I hope that you, as you go along this journey with us, you will experience some of the wonderful lessons and experiences and feelings and thoughts from these very clinical men. And then I'll introduce myself more formally in the end. So we're going to start off with Jeremy. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Jeremy.
Yes, greetings. Peace, and thank you for having me and thanking you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Jeremy Darden. I live here in Baltimore. I'm a licensed clinical social worker. My wife and I have our own practice called Intentional Healing Space, where we offer a variety of mental health psychotherapy as well as other integrated practices such as yoga and Reiki. I've been practicing as a mental health counselor in some variation for the past 20 years. So it's an honor to be here. It's a privilege to be able to speak and to listen and to just join in the conversation. And so thank you very much.
Okay. Rob?
Hey, everybody. Greetings as well. My name is Robert Bacon. By profession, I am a juvenile probation officer. I've been one for about 11 years, but I've been in the social work backdrop for about 20 years. I, too, live in Maryland, more so in the Owings Mills area, which is about Baltimore County, but I do work in the district. I am super excited for this platform to be able to give some insight and learn some insight. And I'm just raring to go. I am married with six beautiful children. And that's all that I have so far, bro.
So I didn't answer one of the questions. Where did the unicorn come from? So when I was coming through the School of Social Work, because I'm a licensed clinical social worker as well, I realized something that was really astounding. And this has been true ever since then, is that males in this profession are like unicorns. And when you have a unicorn, you know, they're looked at as magical and things like that. But I really would not push towards magical and more towards, this is a space where you get to hear from people that are doing the work from a male's perspective. And that's the bottom line. And so I'm Orrin Howard. I'm a licensed clinical social worker. I have my own private practice called Inspired Leadership Therapy and Consulting Services. I'm a national, local, and regional presenter. I'm also a professor at a nationally ranked university and been one for 12 years. I'm a father of an 18-year-old getting ready to go to college, go TU. And so I'm passionate about the work. We're all passionate about the work. But let me tell you a little bit, and I want to hear from the both of you about why you decided to get into this profession. And I'll start with Rob first. Why'd you decide to get into this profession, considering there are not many men in it?
two things kind of drew me to this profession. One of those things was that my mother is in this profession, and I ran away from this a lot, but looking at her studying and following her footsteps kind of pushed me towards it. The second thing is being able to help young Black men was always something that gave me an inner peace. And I decided that I would do something with my life that I love to do. And so this is why I said, okay, this is going to be my field. So that's it for me.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Jeremy.
Yeah, I stumbled along the way and found a path, or the path was made clear for me along the way. And so, you know, I went to school when I graduated high school, went to school, studied sociology, criminal justice, got a job at a local juvenile detention facility. And I'm going to start naming some names because there were some people that I met along the way that really kind of pointed me or pointed a path towards me. And so there's a brother by the name of Kent Alford, a male nurse who was working at the correctional facility. And so he saw something in me that I didn't yet see in myself. And he said, hey, why don't you do this? And I was like, no, couldn't be me, right? Still trying to discover for myself what was it that I wanted to do, right? And so with his urgence and with, I think, his confidence from the outside in, it was very helpful. He served as like a mentor to me. And then also, you know, I can go on. So it's a long story over the last 25 years, but I'm going to wrap it up for now. Just there were people in my path starting from a young age that encouraged me, educated me, and inspired me along the way. There were life experiences, and to whom much is given, much is expected in return. And so I was able to really come into mental health, which was not my original idea. And along the way, it all connected and it all clicked. So I wouldn't be here if it weren't for so many other folks. And so when I speak, I can hear their voice speaking through me. And so it's my way of just offering back what has been poured back into me. So
thank you so much for that. Yeah, Rob, I need to double back to you for a second because your journey is not over. What are some of your thoughts about your career and where you're thinking about going? Because I know you talk about being a probation officer, but that's not your end game.
No, not at all. I actually have an 18-year-old, which is my youngest child, going away to college as well. And so once he steps his foot in his dorm room, we'll then begin my journey again to get my master's in social work as well. So that's where I'm going at it with at this particular point. I have two people on this particular podcast who push me all the time and show me what that's going to look like. So, yeah, I am beginning my second stage of where I want to be. So that's my plan.
And so for me, I didn't want to be here. I actually switched my major four times. I felt entitled coming up. I had an interesting background, had a lot of different experiences as a child, and my goal was to make money. And then I was called to this. It was in my spirit. It was like everything that I experienced personally in my life led me to this place. It gave me the insight to be able to help some of the people that we serve. And that's how I ended up in social work. I really didn't know what social work was. It was somebody that I was dating at the time that was at my former social work school, shout out to the Mecca. And I really decided to embrace it. And once I dove in, it became like a healthy marriage that has lasted throughout time. But I can't say as a male clinician, as an African-American clinician, it hasn't come at a cost. And one of the things that I wanted to kind of jump right into, because I'd be remiss, that as exciting as it is for us to start a podcast today, on June the 12th, 2020, we are in the midst of some very, very critical times. And so what I would say is that I'm part of that experience as well. We're all part of that experience. And I wanted to start off, and I'll start with you this time, Jeremy. I want to start off and kind of talk about, as a clinician, as a person of culture, multicultural, as a man that has children that are biracial, where are you seeing the men of color during this current space that we're in?
Whew. There is so many places, I think, to really enter into the conversation, and no one response would cover the whole spectrum, right? Mm-hmm. And so what I see collectively in this very moment, we're living in very powerful and intense times, right? We're seeing the squeezing of so much pain, so much suffering, so much resilience, so much brilliance, so much resolve, so much determination. So I don't want to say grandiose and say that I see it all, because I don't, but I see so many narratives. I hear so many narratives that are really now being spoken. And I think, to me, that's such a powerful piece, because for so long, voices were being taken, right? Voices weren't being allowed to speak, or weren't being encouraged to speak or amplified, right? Be it because the field of mental health has, deservedly so, developed a horrible stigma in communities of color, right? And psychiatry has done a lot of damage. And so now I think that with greater representation, having more people of color being the face of the helper, the professional relationship, I think that now what's emerging is a more openness to speak, the ability to have a voice spoken and be heard. But we see with the uprisings, and we see with the unrest, that we need more of it, right? We need more being able to put our experiences into words and our words into action, right? And so because there's this tendency to have a monolithic one person speak for an entire, you know, generation, or one person speak for an entire culture, or one person speak for an entire race, I think now we are welcoming in and ushering in and allowing for such a variety of voices to really speak for themselves and to control the narrative or to participate in the narrative, unlike times before. So in terms of the field of mental health, I'm seeing and experiencing more men of color actually initiating the conversation, asking for help, and trusting the process a little bit. But I'm also seeing so many more men of color, women of color, taking that role of the helping profession, and I truly see it as a healing journey and a healing process. So,
thank you for that, Rob. You are in this interesting position of working with young people, young men, young women, working with colleagues in the field of criminal justice. And we'll have a whole episode about that criminal justice field. What are you seeing from the clients and the young men that you're working with in the field as it relates to the current space of men of color?
I think now with some of the things that's happening, this generation has woke up to the fact that they have within them the power to change, more so than other generations before, including ours, where we were, as Jeremy said, waiting for a monolithic God to come and praise, but then also tear down. So I feel like as each instance happened, their anger starts to really make them ask questions about what can I do? As opposed to waiting for someone else to do it. I'm starting to see the young activists in a lot of our young men who turn to crime for nothing else but something to do. And now we're saying, okay, what can I do at this particular point? Because I'm angry and I'm upset and I want to be able to do some things. So I'm very happy about that. And that's what I'm seeing now with in our current sphere of what's happening around us that's been happening to Black men for since the existence of time, right? And it is also a way for us to kind of reach them where they are with understanding that it is okay to be angry because these things are not right. But I'm seeing a lot of young folk talking about voting where the generation before, which is our generation, wasn't talking about that. We didn't think about voting because we didn't feel like and a lot of us still don't believe that the government is there to assist us in any way in terms of laws and things of that nature. The last thing I see is that they're trying to equal the playing field. And in doing that, they have to realize the game that they're in, whether it's with criminal justice, whether it's with education, whether it's with jobs, and understanding that, you know, you can't depend on that young lady or your mom or your grandmom to take care of you anymore. So looking for different rites of passages, I feel like on a positive end, is what some of these young men are trying to reach out and do. So,
wow, that's powerful. For me, in my private practice, in my classroom, when I speak across the country, when I work with teens in Baltimore City, I'm hearing four themes that's really coming up. One is people are feeling tired. Men are feeling tired. They're tired of having this conversation. They're tired of explaining it. They're tired of seeing what they see. They're tired of feeling what they feel. And I'm having, and we'll get into this a little later, I'm having to help people acknowledge that space and be present to that space. And that's important. Another theme that I'm seeing is that people are feeling affirmed. Some African-American men are feeling vindicated by what's going on. They knew they weren't crazy. They're learning, including myself, that this issue of systemic oppression is global, not just here in the United States, it's global. Now, you may have known that cognitively, but the ability to be able to process it and see it in real time takes it to another level. The third theme that I'm seeing is the caution. Some people are optimistically cautious. Some people are pessimistically cautious about what's going to happen next. There's a lot of things going on with the protests. People want to see what's going to happen after the protests. Are people prepared to make these economic sacrifices? Are people prepared to literally die for what they believe in? And these are some of the things that's coming on, and people are struggling on what role they play. These men are struggling on what role they need to play in the protests. And the last thing is Kubler-Ross's five stages of grief and loss: the denial, the anger, the bargaining, the depression, the acceptance. I'm seeing people go through all those stages, and we'll talk about in the next part of our segment. And I'll even start it off. We're talking about you're having to deal with this and work with these men of color in the midst of having to go through it yourself. And I'll say I had a long conversation with Jeremy this morning just about my life. And I had sent these brothers a video of a famous comedian that was speaking out on it. And we've been inundated and things like that. And the thought behind this is, how are we navigating this and supporting other people while feeling it at the same time? And I'll tell you, I don't have a clear cut answer for you. My university asked me to host an open healing space. And to be quite honest, only one person, one family came to that space out of the entire university of faculty and students and things like that. And I understand, I was disappointed, but I was empathetic to it because I realized that people are tired. People don't just want to talk. A lot of people want to do, they want to see the change. I think for one client that in particular stood out to me is that he just couldn't imagine that in the midst of a global pandemic, that racism and oppression still ruled. He felt like the pandemic itself was going to be the change. And because of that, I feel like what's happening is that it's causing us as the helpers, it's causing the people that need our help to be in this perpetual cycle of really trying to figure it out while supporting each other, while not having any background, because anybody alive wasn't really at the last pandemic. And so these are the things that people are experiencing. I would be lying if I said this isn't a difficult time for me as a helper. I try and figure out how I can get the support that I need. And I'm telling my audience out there, get you a therapist. Even therapists have therapists. I reached out to mine. And so these are some of the things that I'm trying to do to navigate through it. Let me start back off with you, Rob. Like, how are you navigating the balance between the two of helping these young folks? Because I know you specifically deal with young folks, and managing you, your family, and that situation.
Well, to be honest with you, these past few weeks, I've been numb. And because it's been a lot, there's been a lot of questions that my sons have been asking me, a lot of questions that the kids that I work with have been asking me about what to do. And I've been giving them answers from my heart. But I've been numb to a lot of it because I'm trying to process the right way to go about letting out some of this anger appropriately. And saying what needs to be done as we move forward after all of these marches and protests are over. One of the things that I've been saying is that if you're that angry about it, let's do some writing, let's do some reading. And I know that sounds corny to some of my young folk, and they really don't. And so I challenge them to go on their social media sites, maybe download Talib Kweli, or some other people who are talking about some positive things. Also tell them to go on YouTube and pull up some things and listen, just listen and get some different points of view. And to be honest with you, I'm doing the same thing. So I'm giving them things that I'm doing as well to process all of this. So that's where I am with it right now.
Okay. Jeremy, you want to add in?
Yeah, I really appreciate you know, hearing Rob and also hearing you, Oren, and because I don't have the answers and trying to navigate these experiences personally, and then also to continue to recognize and respect the fact that people need some support, and as a helping professional, that's also my role. But what I reflect on, what I realize is that this system, since the inception of this country, it has been built on the backs, the bone, the blood, the body of people of color. Black and indigenous people have borne the brunt of this system for 450 years. And what I respect is that some things need to be destroyed and some things need to be created. And I think what we are bearing witness to, what I hope we are bearing witness to, is the destruction of an unjust and oppressive system. And what comes next is not very clear. And so that's very anxiety inducing for me. But I'm very hopeful because I believe in principles of righteousness. I believe in principles of justice, and unjust systems cannot survive very long, right? And so I rely on my own faith, my own worldview, right? My own beliefs as sustaining, right? Through times of trouble and hardship. I learn from the strength and the resilience and the brilliance of others to say, wow, if ancestors and elders can endure the hardships of times that existed before me, then I need to be accountable for myself. I think it was Naeem Akbar who had said that each generation is responsible and accountable for its own self sustainability, right? Something to that effect, right? And yeah. So I draw strength from that. For me, prayer and meditation is medicine. Music is meditation. Right? Music is medicine, right? And so I've really been paying attention to what I feed my mind and my body, right? And so a lot of the music that's really been resonating heavy with me, just really going back and listening to a lot of like the Bob Marley and the Wailers, man. Just really resonating with, okay, there's something deeper that's going on, right? And then also turning toward and turning with my own family and loved ones, my brothers, my brethren, right? My wife and my children, looking my children in their eyes and saying, look, you all are inheriting this world. You got to leave it in a better position than what it is now. And so that inspires and motivates me, and it also holds me accountable as well. So so it's hard times, man. It's real hard, and we're all are feeling it. If we're not feeling it, then you're probably still in the matrix somewhere lost, right?
I feel you.
For real. And so I'm filled with a lot of concern and a lot of worry for how we may make it through, but I also have this overwhelming belief that we will make it through, right? We've come this far, right? So so I know that's a long answer to a short question.
Not at all.
Trust and believe, I can go on for days.
But, hey, that was so necessary, so needed, and I appreciate it. For our listening audience, please understand that we are in the beginning phases. We're going to improve over time, but we don't want you not to be included in this. We want you to be included. So right now, as you hear this podcast, if you email us at theunicornscouch@gmail.com, theunicornscouch@gmail.com, we promise that we will either include your comments, your questions on the show, or we'll respond to you directly. I will say, when the pandemic started for me, because I can't not address that as well. When the pandemic started for me, I was confused about it. I was ill prepared for it. I thought that I could cook my way into satisfaction. I thought I could drink my way into satisfaction. I thought that I would be gratified by all the shows I can catch up on and all those things. And it did none of that for me. Mm-hmm. And so when I started this process, I realized that I needed to take control. And we'll talk to some solutions and some goals for our African-American men's health. But what I did was I decided to take control for me. And I started doing things that I needed to do. I've lost 20 pounds. I'm running every other day. I am clean eating. I'm a part of a fraternity, one of the greatest fraternities in the world. And I won't mention it because we're on the show. Yes, I will. Kappa Alpha Psi Fraternity Incorporated. And I had some doctors that took the Kappa Man Challenge. Rob's going to tell you another fraternity, but I took the Kappa Man Challenge, which was plant-based. And that plant-based diet that me and Rob and really Jeremy's a pescatarian, we decided to do some clean eating. We decided, yesterday morning, I meditated before I ran. I had a morning meditation. I tried yoga for the first time. We'll get into that in another episode, but I'm mad that y'all didn't tell me that it was going to be that hard. And so, so these are some of the things that we do to kind of balance and navigate. But it's so important for us to have outlets. It's so important for us to be real. And these are the things that I think is important for our audience to understand, regardless of your age, regardless of your place, regardless of your situation, regardless of your employment status. Like, we got to get that control back. And so, along that line, you heard me mention about some mental health goals for men in 2020. For young men, Rob, and for all ages, Jeremy, Rob, and myself, what are some of the goals that you're really working on with these men to help keep them uplifted, keep them strong?
Jeremy, if I can, I'd like to go first. I took some notes, and I want to be able to say that I have been sharing this with all of the kids that I work with. One of the things that I said to them, which I got from a social worker, which is on this podcast, and it's called Breathing is a Spiritual Practice. And so When I laid that on them, they said, okay, yeah, whatever. And I said, no, think about it. If you close your eyes and you breathe, right, you hold your breath and then you let it out. And if you think about, you know, how spiritual that is in this time where we got face masks on because we can't be around people, I said, and then you'll start to realize that it is truly spiritual that you're able to breathe. I said, and then another thing that I did, because again, I took copious notes, is that I have started to, with my young men just this week, giving them a goal that I want to attack their five senses. I got that from Mr. Howard. Oh, yeah. Sorry, I'm stealing, but I got to pay my dues.
Hey, it's okay, not I got to pay my dues. Hey, okay. What was it? Haile Selassie, I said, knowledge not given ain't knowledge at all.
Right.
Yeah. Do that thing, brother.
Yeah, so, you know, I took those two principles and I built on them this week, okay? And in my conversations with my kids, because I have to speak to them every day, Monday through Friday, I have to have a conversation with them. And in tagging their five senses, what I left them with this week was, tell me how you would attack your five senses. And I gave them an example. Going with what Oren said about clean eating, I said, now let's attack the sense of taste, right? And I said, I challenge you for the next week to stop eating chicken. And then I said, now, what I want you to understand is that being a vegetarian prior, I know that the hardest part to kick is chicken. And because chicken gets in our noses and our senses, and you ride past places, and if you smell chicken, you want it, right? And so I said, see if you can stop eating. So, you know, a lot of them said, come on, Mr. Bacon, you know, and they're from different, you know, economic backgrounds. And I said, listen, I get it. You know, I said, but just see if you can do that. I said, and that is how you learn to attack your senses. So we dealt with two senses this week. Then I'm going to hit them with three more next week. So again, you know, not to belabor the point, but I've been using things that have been given to me that I've been listening to and the knowledge. And I've been kicking it out to these young people because the problem that you can have is you can feel like they don't understand you when, in fact, they yearn that knowledge. They yearn it. They understand it. They need it. OK. And if they can push all of the other things in their brain, which I'm not judging because we did the same. OK. According to our elders, listening to rap music would be the death of us. Right. So now you have to look at, well, the music and the things that they're listening to. If we can just get a little piece of that and give them some positive stuff and some positive knowledge to kind of wake them up to what's going on, then that's my key and that's my goal. So it's not about probation for me anymore. And I don't know what that means for my job, but now I want it to be a little bit different for them, right? And so instead of just checking in for a curfew, right, I'm now checking in for a body checkup. Are we checking our five senses and are we breathing in a spiritual manner? So that's where I'm at with it this week. Okay.
I like how you said, Rob, this week. Mm-hmm. I like that. I like that presence. Jeremy, yeah. I'm going to let you jump in now.
No, I was really, really, really receiving that, right, Rob? Because what I also heard was it's such a growth mindset, right? Mm-hmm. You're looking, you're listening, you're learning, you're sharing, and you're also present in the now, right? But you're also open to the journey as it unfolds in the days and hours and weeks to come, man. So beautiful work, man. And to add on to that, for me, everything in life starts with and returns to the breath, right? On a physical level, we wouldn't be able to have much of a conversation or much of a life experience at all without connecting to the breath, which I think speaks to the divine injustice and to the wrath of the George Floyd and the Eric Garner statement, I can't breathe, right? Because literally you have, you know, evil forces taking away the very breath of life, right? And so tapping into that with men in therapy is really identifying and connecting with a natural breath. We don't have to force it. We don't have to work at it. It's just a matter of receiving the breath, right? Connecting to it. What does that breath do in the now, in the moment, right? Because what breathing does is as we inhale, it teaches us what we hold on to, right? It teaches us what we accept and embrace in life. And then the exhale reminds us of what we need to let go of. Because if we hold that breath for too long, it will make us sick. Mm. The very thing that gives us life can actually kill us if we hold on to it for too long, right? And so the same way with the anger, we have to receive some of that anger because it could be a righteous anger. We have to receive that grief and that loss and that bereavement, right? Because it can teach us, emotions are an energy, man. Emotions are energy in motion. And we have to understand what that energy is. And we have to understand what the motion of it is. And we have to learn how to work with it. We have to remember how to work with it. Because I think these are things that are intuitively in us already. We just have to return to it and remember it. We have everything that we need. But we're living in such a confusing and unjust system, right? For anybody that's read the book, the Four Agreements, right? I think it does a very, very powerful job of just reminding us that we have to remember what our indigenous voices are, whether that indigenous voice is the voice of God or a voice of our conscience. But we have so many colonizing voices in our head, right? And so being able to tune out what those colonizing voices are and being able to return to that which is ours, our divine right and our divine responsibility, right? Mm-hmm. And so working with men, just really looking at, okay, how has trauma, how has stress, how has injustice impacted you over the course of your life and then also in the present moment, right? And then what can we hold on to and then what can we let go of? And it is a process. And anytime you hear me use the word process, it's a matter of looking at a practice and also patience because it takes time. And when we're not practicing skills, we need to practice patience, right? And so just respecting that there is a process in our own unfolding and our own becoming, right? And hopefully through therapy is just one way of getting in touch with ourselves. It's not the only way. For some folks, it's not even the best way. But it is a resource that is available, and I'm just an advocate of good physical health, of good emotional health, of good mental health, and also of good spiritual health, right? And so for the men primarily, but for anybody that's seeking out help, right, just know that there is help, but also there are ways in which you've been empowered. We all have been empowered with a divine right and a divine responsibility of caring for ourselves, and therapy can help nurture and nourish that process.
Sure. I think you touched on many great points and both of you touched on many great points. I would add to this process, some of the goals that I've been working on is helping men understand that being present and just being is a win. I think so often that men have been socialized in America, and I would imagine in other countries that I've traveled and talked to the men there, there's some similarities that men aren't comfortable with just being. Like, right. If you feel sad, if you cry, I can't lie to you. I've cried more in the last 3 weeks than I've cried in a long time on different issues because I'm honoring my emotions. I'm allowing my emotions to just be. And to help young men, help men and anybody else for that matter, to understand that that essential place is like you have permission to be. And, and that's an important thing that not only do we help others to do, we gotta remind ourselves. You know, Rob and Jeremy are my brothers, so they may call me and remind me to just be. And I think that's important. And I want this to be authentic. This podcast that we have is authentic. We're telling you in real time how we're really dealing with things, both as a professional and as a client, so to speak. And so the other thing that I've really been working with men on and goals is like how to get organized again. When you have a global pandemic, things get shut down. It's you can't go to the game. You can't go to the movie theater. You can't go to the basketball court. You can't do the things that are normally social. Now you can drink, which is amazing that was an essential service, but but you can't do the things that you normally did for an outlet. You can't go to the club. And so what happens is that people feel a sense of loss of control. And when you feel a sense of loss of control, you know, you feel desperate. You're reaching out for things and you're not getting the kind of satisfaction and gratification that you need. And so what I've been doing is helping people get organized, establishing a way that they can have control over themselves. I always talk about these two things in therapy, the relevant question and the irrelevant question. The relevant question is a question that you can do something about. How can I empower myself? In that, implicit in that question is an ability for people to be able to plan around getting empowerment.
That's right.
You can't plan around irrelevant questions. Why don't people accept me by the color of my skin? You can't plan around that. That's not something you can control. So asking people to ask the right questions. I just spoke in California this morning to a group of organizations, and they're working with young people. And I said the same thing. And some of the feedback that I got and the questions that I got was like, you know, where do I start with that? Get organized. Well, you got to ask the relevant question. You got to ask the question that you can do something about. What do I need to feel safe? What do I need to feel healthy? What do I need to feel strong? What do I need to feel connected? And that's an important thing. Rob touched on it earlier, and I love the fact, brother, you can steal anything, anytime, all day, every day, because it's not stealing. And so what I would say to you around the five senses that I think people, and I've been doing this with clients for years. I've been doing it with my students. I've been doing it everywhere I can. When you're going through life and you're trained, like Jeremy said, to not concentrate on breathing, but the essential essence of breathing is so important. Like, you usually attack a problem from one thing. You know, you don't always attack it from more than one thing. If you're feeling some way, you attack it through your feelings. You know, if you're feeling some kind of way, you might attack it through eating. But if you're not present, you're going to get that fried chicken. You're going to get that ribs. You're going to get that gratification, that woman, that whatever your thing is, you're going to go for. But when you attack your five senses and you attack more than one sense, it's like you're coming in with a team. So if I attack what I'm hearing and what I'm seeing and what I'm feeling, then you're coming in with a team of attacks. And if you want to win, then it's always better to come with a team than to come with one approach. And so that's an important piece. And then the other thing that's come up really recently, especially around the protests, which is really kind of remarkable, especially with the men and some of the women too that I work with, but the men in particular, is that there's a sense of guilt about what place they should be taking in the protest. What place should they, what role should they have in the protest? And I think it was, I forget the Nation of Islam brother Raziz Islam, I think his name is, and some other people have said it as well as me, is that, listen, every protest that has ever existed in America and most places had an element of everything in it. There was not one way that a movement, now they were galvanized around one role, which is liberation, freedom, or whatever the case may be. But there were some people who didn't do any protest that stayed at home, and all they decided to do was take care of their family better. Yep. That is a role in the protest, in the movement. And so what I've been helping people do is really focus and lock in on the notion that, you know, we can take whatever role that you feel is appropriate. You can be in multiple roles, but you got to be comfortable with the roles that you're taking.
Yeah. Yeah. I remind myself, and I talk with folks, you know, the most radical and the most revolutionary thing that we can do is truly and honor, love ourselves and each other. Right. If we can love ourselves and each other through all of this, right, the system is built on separating and dividing and conquering, right? Can you imagine if James Baldwin gave his life on the front lines of some protest, right? Mm-hmm. And wouldn't have been able to live out or share his gift, right? Mm-hmm. The master teacher, John Henry Clark, reminds us that when nation building happens, there is a role for everybody. Right. We need the folks that can plant the food and cultivate the food. We need the poets that can inspire us through the arts. We need the warriors that can really hold and keep space. We need the teachers. Right. So we need all people. Right. So I think it's a very powerful point and just wanted to amplify it.
I think that's an excellent point, Jeremy. I think that we're at this place, too, where we have to, I give this example, and I just want to spend a couple minutes on this, but this was a female client that I was talking about that had children, and we were talking about planning for the summer, and she hadn't thought about it because we're in the middle of a pandemic, and she hadn't thought about what we needed to do moving forward. So if you can talk for a couple minutes each about how you're forecasting with the people that you're working with around 2020 and adapt and helping them to adapt to things to come. I throw out an example, the second wave of the coronavirus. The verdict comes and policy changes, but, we're still not attacking systemic racism. Those are examples of potential things that you have to forecast for. So if you can both spend like a couple minutes just talking about how you are helping your clients forecast for the future.
I am helping them because as I'm sitting here and taking in all of what was said, what comes to mind is what Jeremy mentioned earlier. And I'm going to pose this question to them. The question is, what is your role in the new reconstruction? Mm-hmm. Okay. I feel like reconstruction is bound to happen within the next 5 years. And knowing that everyone has a role, what is your role going to be? Specifically dealing with the young people that I deal with who are in the criminal system, knowing that jails are the new plantations. You need to think about what your role is going to be and how working on a plantation does little for the new reconstruction. And so in doing that, I'm also going to educate them about the reconstruction and what happened in Black Wall Street, but also what they can do in terms of what their role can be, whatever it is, whether they want to be a poet or a rapper or whatever, even just getting a job or helping their mom or taking care of their family. So that's my question moving forward. And that's where I'm going at it after today.
Oh, you see that little nugget he dropped, Jeremy? That little nugget he dropped. Estimated 54 to 123 cities that were predominantly African-American in this country and all of them wiped away. So
how about
that? I saw you, Rob. So go ahead, Jeremy, jump in on this.
How about that? To me, really, the emphasis of balance has really kind of come to the top of the mind of many conversations, right? Because we have to recognize and humble ourselves. We are not in control of the future, right? We all can get a phone call during this podcast and our whole night, our whole day, our whole week, our whole life can change and we don't plan for it, right? And so I think that there has to be some humility and some openness to just continue to adapt, to continue to be open to the future and whatever it may come, right? But we also have to be practical. Those that are prepared don't have to get prepared, right? We have to have this sense of readiness. So we have to be balanced even when we are in the place of uncertainty, right? And for me, balance includes just being open to the moment, knowing myself, but also knowing what I'm still becoming, right? The question, who have I become and who am I becoming, comes to mind, right? And so really having this place of balance to say, I know not what tomorrow may bring, but I know I need to show up, be present, and be accounted for. I need to do the best that I can so that I can step into the moment and stay as close to the center of myself and as close to the center of my values, as close to the center of my vision and version of life as I choose to live it, and just really step into that moment, right? So again, I started the conversation, and you'll probably get tired of hearing me saying it. Collectively, we don't have the answers, right? However, we know what the answers aren't, right? This system is not the answer, right? More of the same is not the answer. And I welcome the young folks to the table, right? They are already at the table, and they are serving some really good food right now. It tastes, ooh, it tastes refreshing.
Yeah. Right?
And so I'm very excited to see what this moment and the next may bring, but there's fear there also, because we know that power will not relinquish itself. And we got some really big bullies with some big weapons, mm-hmm, right, that are willing to hold on to power, right? And so, again, returning to the question, you know, just helping folks to better understand themselves and understand the circumstances, mm-hmm, and then to move from there. Because with knowledge of self and a good understanding, a good, sober, clear understanding of our circumstances, I trust we can figure the rest out.
Mm. I love that. And I just want to add to what both of you said is that when we talk about this notion of forecasting, plan for your win, plan for the space that you want to be in. It was Khalil Gibran, yeah, the prophet, that when they talked to, they sat on the edge of the island and wait for this prophet to come. And he says, speak to us about good and evil and the two of them. And so one of the things that I really try to help people and help myself understand in this process is that, you know, some of the best decisions we made came out of some of the most trying moments in our life.
How about that?
Yep. Some of the worst experiences we had came from what felt really great.
Absolutely.
So be present, plan for your win. Giselle did a lot of talking in his ceremonies at schools about embracing failures. I take it to another level from a mental health standpoint and from just a space is like, listen, you may think it's a failure, but it may be the precursor to your win. Mm. And so, you know, I'm so grateful for us to go on this journey together. I want to tell you the format. We will be alternating hosts on depending on the show. I'll tell you, for the people who didn't hear earlier, if you want to get in, you want to express yourself, if you want to get some feedback, it's theunicornscouch@gmail.com. That's theunicornscouch@gmail.com. Just email us. We'll try and block off some time in the episode based on the feedback to kind of address any questions or concerns or thoughts, or we promise you we'll address it specifically. And so in the upcoming weeks, we're going to do season one, and season one is 6 episodes. The next episode is hosted by Jeremy, and we're going to be talking about finding spirituality in a material-centered world. That would be real exciting. Jeremy's going to lead that. We're going to get into that dialogue. The third show I'll be hosting again, and that's going to be called Habits, Routines, and Rituals for Growth and Healing. And we'll get into that. The next two shows, Rob takes over. And let me tell you about my brother, Rob. Rob, yeah, brings it to you raw. So yeah, he's going to have episodes 4 and 5. 4 is destigmatizing mental health treatment. And 5 is truth and reconciliation within relationships. Yeah, we are going to get into relationships. Ooh. And then who better to end off our season one but bringing it back to Jeremy? And he's going to be talking about me against the world. And I think we'll get into what that means. But I think that we hope that our listeners, that our audience can take something away that you can give or use. There's no charge for this. This ain't a session. But this is about us all collectively growing. Ubuntu. I am as we are. I learned that from Brother Richard Rowe out of Black Mental Health Alliance when he's teaching us how to incorporate healing-centered engagement for our young people in Baltimore City that's getting ready to do some big things. Shout out to them. Shout out to all my students, former students that pushed and said this was necessary. I'm grateful and thankful for my university that paved the way for me to manifest this vision. I'm thankful for having a practice that I can give back at the same level of quality than anybody that does this business. I don't know if you guys want to shout anybody out or give some gratitude. I'm thankful for the people in my inner circle that have rode with me, including these two gentlemen that's on this line today. Anybody else want to give any shout outs or thoughts before we close out today?
I tell you what, I just want to express a spirit of thankfulness and gratitude, because to be able to be present, to listen to the two of you all, not only on the air, but then also in private conversation, giving thanks for brotherhood and camaraderie, because we know one finger in and of itself can't even lift a pebble, right? Mm. And so we're trying to lift some things up here, and it's a beautiful thing. And so I'm looking forward to it. So just giving thanks, man. Peace.
And last but not least, again, you guys know what you mean to me, your mentors and your brothers to me. And I'm very thankful to have this platform to be able to get out my own issues and work through some things as well. Last but not least, to all of my ancestors who have paved the way for us to be able to be strong Black men and kings, and speak from our heart, and move our families, our individual tribes, so that we all can be great. So my thanks go to them as well.
Yeah, and I appreciate both of you. Let me say this. Now you've gotten a taste of what it's like to be in the space of a unicorn. But we come to you as a humble, humble servant. We are open if you want to give feedback about the show, if you want to give some constructive criticism. We come to you in this space of just wanting to join, wanting to be a part of something that makes a difference in people's lives. And so until the next time, the Unicorn's Couch is out. Remember, unicornscouch@gmail.com. We'll see you again soon.
Peace.